Hey, you've got the morning show with Aaron. That was Taisha Tali with Karanga, and I've got Ngaronoa Renata in the studio. Good morning.
Atamari e koutou ma. Kei te pēhea koutou. Ko tēnei te wā tataki a ko tai mai a puanga rātou ko te kāhui o whetu, te kāhui o Matariki. Ai.
So we're talking about puanga? Talking about Matariki.
So puanga, we're gonna yes. Let's have that conversation, because as we navigate forward to give this rhythm in the heavens time to breathe and speak to us in that way, we are also other celebrations which were favoured no longer have a place or a meaning to us, maybe. I was just saying that people are still celebrating the Christmas, so they have a mid-winter Christmas feast.
And they're doing this, I wasn't aware of this, but are they doing this on Matariki?
Around this time.
Around this time,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because it's winter, but yeah.
I guess at least they've moved it to the right time of year for Christmas, but then that's
is this the time that the Christ was born?
This is the time that the Catholic Church imposed the celebration of Christ's birth on whatever indigenous celebrations were happening in Europe at the time.
Oh,
right. So they've got a little, by having it in winter, it's a little bit closer to the original intent, but it is trampling over the actual indigenous celebration that we now officially have in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
When I say officially, I mean sanctioned by the colonial government.
Yeah, sanctioned.
Yeah.
We've got to get the languaging right.
Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to get everything just so.
So it gives us permission to publicly funded event. It gives us permission to that we're on a new rhythm, but an ancient rhythm to do with the celebration of the rising of Puanga. For many iwi, puanga is really held as the te tohu o te tauhou, is the star, the sign that we are moving into, to stop for a moment, reflect, and then plan for the year ahead. So that's kind of, as we infuse this celebration, this time of the year, I am aware that it feels more natural to do so than to quieten down, to sit closer to the fires, to light the fires, and to dream about what's possible for the year ahead. So taking a breather.
I really don't feel like I'm taking a breather
moment. No, I'm sure you're not. I'm sure you're
I was just contemplating that while you were saying that. Like
I mean, I'm sure many of us don't know what it is to really breathe in.
Not at this time of year. Like
any time of year.
The pattern we're given is to have a holiday at Christmas time in the summer in this country.
It's, yeah. Feels like a wonderful opportunity now to breathe in, to have those conversations around the planning for the spring of the Mara Kai. So what will you plant? But that tohu also is given to us by Matariki, where Matariki sits, actually physically sits on the northeastern horizon. So the reading of that then tells us whether the year ahead will be bountiful or lean. And okay, then we can proceed with how we are going to approach our gardening practice, Mara Kai. Because Mara Kai was like the major event, really, of the tribe. There's no pack and save or countdown or new world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it makes sense. So.
Yeah, everything had to revolve around that.
Everything revolved around celebrating, well, Many things are revolved around pātaka kai, how the food was stored. So the gathering of kai came in. So to kohikohi ngā kai, that's the gathering of kai, and then the storage of kai. So pātaka kai is to do with that formula where how do we store food over the winter months to sustain us if you haven't got a... Well, the pātaka was a very specific type of building.
Mm.
And it served that purpose that our... Well, it's not the same as our pantries, actually. It's not. You know, we have this thing called a pantry, which is where we put all the things that we use on a regular daily basis. Pātaka is where you store kai that isn't... You don't just go in there every day. You leave it because it needs that time. You don't touch it until you need it.
Yeah, and it's, and when we say pantry, we think it's just a thing. We chuck the stuff in and come back. But for the pātaka, I know, having seen the film that Te Maurito made,
yes,
that there's a lot of work goes into ensuring that the kumara survives the weeks and months that it's going to be there.
Yes, and now the
can't
thing...
Can't just chuck it in a box.
No, and that's the art. That's the art that we're, how do you say, we're coming coming back to that rhythm of understanding, well, do all kumara store well? Well, no, they don't. So the sorting of the kumara was a very major activity into piles of what would be stored, what would be eaten over the from the harvest immediately. Those kumara that had a blemish, broken, you know, they weren't, they got broken skin, they were eaten first. And then there was also kumara put aside for the next planting.
Right,
so it's
all
quite
carefully
a lot
selected.
Of careful sorting.
I imagine now that when the kumara is picked, it's thrown onto a conveyor belt or a machine and into a big container and jumbled around and bruised a bit. But we rely on refrigeration to, like I've seen apples, you know, they pick the apples and then they dump them all into the big box and they'll get bruising from that. But because they're going into a fridge, it's not such a big deal in the modern world.
Yeah, well, the thing with the kumara too that we understand is there's a time when it's actually in storage that it becomes sweeter.
Okay.
So the sweetening of the kumara happened during that time of storage when it was not available for eating straight away. So that's a process.
But this is, most people know this, that it was like a staple food for pre-European Māori, and it had to survive that storage well if they were to eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We are reclaiming a lot of that mātauranga, the snippets that we can pick up from those who hold that mātauranga, that knowledge, so that we can, for going forward, we can actually do this practice and know that it's a good, solid practice.
Mm.
But it takes a lot of learning. Yeah, the way that they're even harvested, you know, how we carefully harvest. Recently, when we did our harvest within the food security kaupapa, we very carefully harvested. So there's certain gardening tools that are inappropriate to use because they mark the skin of the kumara, and so then doesn't make them suitable for storage.
Yeah.
Timor was the one of the... it's a grubber. It's called, in English, a grubber. It's this seemingly very simple shape, but it's incredible to use. I had the privilege of using one that was made locally from a persimmon branch, because persimmon is very strong.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing. You know, it was all wood. It was a wooden tool.
Very effective. Is it for, well, we know what a grubber is, most of us, so.
Do we?
Well, I hardly garden, and I sort of know what a grubber is, so I figure that's a somewhat of an indication. I think gardening's great, but it's not something I... other people in my family do most of the gardening.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Green fingers, they call it, eh?
Mm.
If somebody who's a gardener, they call them green fingers.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful. My fingers are not green.
So the also the preparation of this the seeds is done over this time. So the choosing of the seeds that you will carry forward as to make the tipu or the tupu seedlings for the next crops, they were also, you know, highly regarded. The corn that was kept for planting in the spring, springtime, is done now at this time of the year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that our centre here, WEC,
yeah, the Environment Centre.
They are very actively involved in those rhythms.
Yeah, there's a lot of seed sorting happening at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's exactly how it was done in the Haukainga and back on Haukainga, Papakainga, where our people lived collectively.
I know that food, what they call food resilience, is very important. One of the important focuses of the Environment Centre. And it's one of those things, like, they look at if we lost contact with food delivery services, how many days could we last? Where would we be able to get food if we couldn't get, you know, the trucks coming over the hill? That sort of thing. So they're thinking about that. But most of us in the modern world are very definitely disconnected from what you're talking about, which is it's so crucial. You've got to get the seeds right. The seedlings have got to grow right. The kumara has to be stored right. It has to be selected right. Everything has to be done right if you want food. Every year, and I'm sure it was normal. The ritual of and the cycle of the year was all very normal, but very important.
Yes, yeah, so when we diminish that practice, we lose touch also with the natural environment that is right around us, and therefore we also have this artificial reliance on. Well, I'll just go to Countdown. Well. Imagine Countdown's not there or wherever you shop. Foursquare.
Yeah, yeah.
Super Value, the dairy. Those, you have to remember that those things are not, there will come a time when they're not, oh, no, don't go there.
There might come a time. Well, we had a power cut a little while ago.
And that was an extraordinary revelation of how unprepared we were.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the town, there was it was quite a festive feeling within the village as people.
Ironically,
well, we could talk about things. We could talk about all the. We could bring the news. How do you say, word of mouth? We could talk about what was actually happening, why people couldn't get back to their homes, you know, on Houchin Road, you know, because so many trees had fallen on the road. So they weren't able to go. We went, wow. So no one was telling us, but we were discussing that on the street corners here in Whangaroa. It was of news to us all to learn about the devastation that had occurred overnight, the fact that we... couldn't heat something, whether it was for a wheat bag, you know, people who need some health treatments daily for their survival, you know, for their comfort, for pain. I remember one man very clearly saying, oh my gosh, I'm in so much pain. He said, normally I would have heated a wheat bag to ease this, you know, the pain that I've got. And I went, right, that's where we're very reliant on electricity, and now we're backing up and realizing, oh, we don't have access to electricity.
We're so reliant on it, and we're so used to having it always there. Like 20 years ago when I first moved here, there were regular power cuts, and you always knew where your candles were and things like that, but it had been a long time since we've had a decent power cut, and I think we're less prepared now because the electricity is so reliable.
Ah, is that what it is?
Well, part of it. I'm speaking personally here.
I don't think we log in the fact that these things can disappear just like that, and what do we do in these situations? But I know there is a discussion that will take place, and they want people to talk about that on the 15th of June. There's a soup night.
Oh,
supper room.
That's one from the... Where's the thing gone?
And that will be an opportunity another opportunity for us to think about what we actually have in our homes. You know, do we have a box of matches, or do we have lighters? Do we know how to use our phones to create light? You know, those, what do we call them, flashlight on the phone?
Yeah.
Some people may not realise they've got one.
Mm, that's really handy things.
As long as your phone is charged.
Yeah, yeah. So, Voice for Choice presents Soup Night, Saturday, 15th of June, 5:30, Stewart Street Church Hall. Preparation for power cuts. Meet Raglan's new Voices for Freedom coordinator. Community connection catch up. Kai Korero. One thing we were trying to provide information here at the radio. But people aren't, a lot of people, I mean, I'm well aware a lot of people don't have radios, but even some older people I met an older lady who came downtown and she didn't know anything that was going on. She had no power, no heat, no internet.
So do you mean the radio, you can have access to radio without power?
And battery powered. Everyone used to have lots of radios with battery powered radios and things like that. But we seem to have moved into an era now where people have, once the power goes off, they've got no internet, they've got no communication. And we saw with Cyclone Gabrielle that for several days radio was the only thing that was working over there. But I mean, even I haven't bought, I mean, I run a radio station, I haven't bought a radio at home for decades. We've just got old ones lying around the house.
Right, gotcha.
But we were getting information for people. I know a lot of people just don't have access to radio even. But then, and you're sure on your phone. Our phones, some phones, you can plug your earplugs in and that acts as an aerial and there's an FM receiver on the phone. But a lot of phones now, they've made them without FM receivers because they don't mind you listening to the radio, they just want you using the internet to listen to it rather than listening to it for free. You should be able to use your phone as a radio receiver, but they've made a lot of them so you can't.
Which is actually
a major civil defence issue, but no one's really talking about it. I had to kind of investigate that at one point.
Yeah, thanks for that. I mean, that's a really important cue.
So when I bought my last phone, I very carefully got one where I could actually pick up an FM radio signal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really good to know. Really important.
But your phone might not be able to.
Well, I will check that in a moment.
You will have a look. So, yes. Like some of them, it's not that they don't have an app for it, it's that they've had the capacity physically removed or physically not put in, I guess, when they designed it. Yeah. So, and it was interesting because for a lot of people, they really were much more in the dark than they would have been 20 years ago. You know, there's some portion of the community that knows to tune into the radio, but another proportion that doesn't. Well, probably there always were ones who didn't, but
Te reo irirangi o whaingaroa. So, yeah, how to make it more accessible or know how to access it when also, not at normal times, but at normal, what's normal. But when we have a crisis like this, like that storm that we experienced. There's an event... A community event going to take place on Saturday, the 29th of June.
Yeah.
In the Raglan Town Hall.
So I think 28th is Matariki Day.
Yes, that's the official day.
Yeah.
And there'll be an extraordinary amount of people paying attention to pre-dawn ceremonies around the country and attending them because they want to see Puanga and Matariki.
We should say, we mentioned Puanga before. I don't know if we covered for people who don't know. Puanga is a star that comes before Matariki.
It does. Yeah. Its English name is Regal. Rigel or Regal?
I don't know. I'm no star
expert. It sits on the left shoulder if you use the imagery of Orion.
Yeah.
And then you have Tautoru, who is the belt of Orion, Putara, who's the at the right ankle, the reki of that imagery, that Greek imagery. That's where they sit in terms of physical location. In Te Ao Māori, they frame it as those constellations as a waka.
Yes, that's a beautiful right, we talked
waka.
About that, yeah.
And the waka is at the tau ihu of the waka, and this particular waka is called the great waka or rangi nui, is one which travels across the night sky, picking up on its way with a kupinga or a net, picking up those who have recently passed over the last year and putting them into the waka, and then comes back around with Taramainuku, who's at the rangatira of that waka, and then they are gathered up within this, like a fishing net, like a kupinga, and they're thrown up into the heavens at some point and become the new stars. So you can find your loved ones. You just go look up into the heavens for the brightest star. You know, there's that rhythm which helps us to navigate the grief too. If we understood, you know, that you could look to the heavens for your loved ones who have passed on, they, according to Māori, in the Māori world, they get transformed into the brightest stars in the heaven. So it's, you know, a beautiful tohu to us to know that. That's what has happened.
So I think I derailed us from talking about the Matariki event that you're about to talk about.
Yes, derailed. There's some workshops, some gorgeous workshops that we've got manifesting, raranga, that's weaving with flax, harakeke, screen printing.
Okay, I haven't seen notices for those yet.
I know, it's coming.
It's coming.
Today, this afternoon.
Okay, right. Are you behind some of this or associated with some of this?
So I'm leading this event and still it's still landing. There's a lot of parts to navigate and to receive confirmation, but the kota, I like to call it the kota, you'd call it the supper room.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the kota to me resonates with a time when our people, when they, the place that they ate food was called the kota, and there was a fire, it was a live fire, that wouldn't be possible today.
And the supper room, it could do with something. It's not a very, it's not a very nice space. It's not. So I can say that, it's all right.
You can say that, you can.
I have said it. It's too late now.
We'll work on it. We'll work on that so it makes it...
A fire would be nice in there, wouldn't it? That would change the atmosphere
considerably. Well, you know, when we have a lighter fire, we know that we're going to cook food. That's really... You don't really light... Yeah. No, we won't go into the fire thing, the ahi, because fires weren't, you know, you just... It was to cook food, that, you know, because it was so precious. So you lit the fire because you were going to cook something. So that imagery and the rammed earth floor. So in my memory, that was the original kota until they decided that they'd actually demolish it and build a very flash dining room. That's right, a dining room with all the bells and whistles of a 5-star hotel. That's where our marais are heading and have headed towards that.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I've been in some marais that they're not only 5-star, they're 6-star. You can, some of the equipment, I go, how do you use this? And stainless steel has become a very big feature of those. Kota. We didn't think about that. And kota.
It's probably health and safety rules.
It is. It's all to do with health and safety. But yet to have a rammed earth floor now is a designer quality, a designer element, isn't it? Yes. You know, it's like... I want a rammed earth floor, and I'm going, oh, well, we had one, you know, that was, the rammed earth floor was in the kota. It was a beautiful, warm, rammed earth floor, and now it's a feature of architecturally beautifully designed homes, which is incredible.
But it has to be. You have to have an earth floor and a very flash house so people understand that it's not because you were poor that you had an earth floor.
Yeah. That rhythm. Yeah. No, it was all part of the tribal life story.
Mm.
So that event is manifesting, and there will be an afternoon concert, community concert, from 1:30 till 3:30. We're packing out by 4 o'clock, because there are so many events on, and the other rhythm that we want to weave into is what is happening at the Old School Arts Centre.
There's this poster I've got here, which actually doesn't tell me much, except there's lots of things happening.
So Kōmako is leading a film event on the 29th of June at 5 o'clock.
That says films, 28th, 29th, 30th of June and 5th of July.
Yes, where she will be featuring...
Is she doing all of those? Or
no, she's doing on the 29th. Actually featuring all the short films that she's produced over her... So far in her indigenous filmmaking life.
So this is your daughter Kōmako?
Yes.
I think one of the other films too will be on Waitangi Day. They had the Toitū Te Tiriti event here in the town hall, and I know people came into the radio station and we interviewed them about how they felt about Waitangi, and I can't remember the details. I just did the interviewing, but there were people filming it, and they've gone to make a film, so I think that will be shown.
Oh, okay.
On one of those days as well, during Matariki.
There was a couple of films shown at the recent Raglan Film Festival. One was The Refinery.
Oh, yeah.
Where Johnny featured.
Mm.
I think it's a really important piece of film. I really feel I'd like to see us... I don't know if it's going to be part of this... offering.
It's 4 days of film. Maybe it will be.
One about the Raglan naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And both of those, there's so many, I think, of that tell the story of Whangaroa, you know, when you, you know, that would make an amazing historical look at our, what's happening, what's been happening in Whangaroa, and important portals as we go forward and engage in changing the world for better.
For better?
Yeah, for better.
Sorry, I was being slightly silly there. Of course it's for better. That's what we want. Now, you did want to talk about Sanctuary Mountain.
I did. I was very fortunate to go to a gala, a dinner and auction called Māori of the Maunga at the Sanctuary Maunga. Sanctuary Maunga is Maunga Tautari. So it's one of the peaks. There are four. I'm not going to talk about, you know, their names as such. I just let you know that the Maunga Tautari, the fundraiser was an auction where all night the mantra was open your wallets. Not open your hearts. I personally would have said open your hearts, but
that was optional.
Open your wallet meant that the auction was a series of gifted, renowned artists had given their work for this auction.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking a few thousand dollars.
Per item.
Yeah, yeah. And the auctioneer was incredible. He was incredibly onto it. It was, yeah, it was amazing to see this rhythm of a piece of work. You know, there's a piece of work by Brett Graham called Water Dreaming. Its estimate was 10,000. That's, yeah.
Okay. I suppose you know how much it actually went for.
I think 10.
Went about for the estimate?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never quite know. But this is serious. So folks who have forgotten or are unfamiliar, Maunga Tautari is the mountain with a fence around it that's protecting all the native wildlife.
Yeah,
it's a major, major project and quite expensive to set up and maintain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's...
But doing wonderful things.
Absolutely. And it's the extraordinary amount of volunteering that goes on is just outstanding. But that actually doesn't pay for particular items that are required. It takes thousands of dollars for it to actually operate each day. The main work that they're doing at the moment is the restoration of kakapo.
Are they reintroducing kakapo to the mountain?
They're there. They're even escaping.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I think what I understand is. Four of them? No, don't quote me on this, but the ones that have escaped have actually been sent back.
they're quite a cheeky bird when you see them. So.
Well, they're the world's biggest flightless bird. Do they fly? Oh, they do actually. No, don't quote me on this.
They're special. Let's just say they're very special.
They are very special.
Yeah.
And I mean, the evening and on these big screens, they showed the kakapo and them coming to the North Island because they're southerners, eh?
Okay. But there's a place to stay up here.
and they escaped over the fence. Oh, look, I'm not laughing at it. But literally because they could slide down this metal... They slide off the trees. They went up in the treetops and then they slid down. So they've redesigned.
So it's a it's a predator-proof fence, but not a kakapo-proof fence.
It is now. But it has taken a lot of engineering to get it that far. So the survival of the kakapo is probably the survival of us. No, don't quote me on that.
It's important. It's biodiversity. It's maintaining the ecosystem that supports all of our life. It's all part of that picture. The kakapo has just got to learn to play its part properly.
I had the good fortune of sitting at the table with mana whenua, those who are deeply connected to that whenua there, mana whenua, who have generations of historical connection. And, you know, I'm just in awe of the Māori, the attention, the sacredness of the maunga, of how important it is to mana whenua and all the rhythms of actually in being able to have these events, this extraordinary annual event where they raise thousands of dollars so they can continue the work, the current work that is being done for the kakapo.
And you've got a book here that's got...
I do. It's a very flash... it's kind of like you think, well, gosh... how much did this cost? Could they have acted a lot cheaper?
Well, I guess it's the money spending vibe. Like it's the open your wallet vibe, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought about that a lot when we were driving home, Kōmako and I. I accompanied Kōmako because she was given, she was asked to play Taonga Puoro at the before the opening karakia, and also a spot where she played her very beautifully, her taonga puoro. And she also highlighted the hue, one of the gourds, because it sounds like the sound resonates to the sound of to the tangi, we call it tangi, the oro, the sound of the kakapo.
Right, sounds like the kakapo.
And I just wanted to share this because it was such an interesting experience for me in that hall. It was very noisy because humans can be when they're having a great night and lots of wine flowing. Lots of wine flowing on the tables.
That's also part of the Open the Wallet vibe.
I mean, there was, I don't know how many tables, but they were beautifully decorated, and there was silence. When Komako spoke and said, this is the sound of the kakapo, she didn't say, I want you to be quiet. And I went, whoa. So I felt the Māori of the oro, of the hue, and I realised it was medicine. What this sound, this frequency, this vibration, people were like momentarily mesmerized. I went, that's what we're talking about when we talk about sound healing. I just knew, I just felt it. Because the silence in the room, you could have honestly heard a pin drop. And that's rare when you get humans together who have been drinking a lot of wine and enjoying an evening of exotic food. I'm very grateful for the food, but I looked at it and I thought, oh, it's too rich for me. I just want a lettuce leaf, really.
Just want a lettuce leaf. So did she just start playing, or did she like hold the space first? Because I know she's got quite a bit of presence when she wants to.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's very true. I did. No, she spoke about the instrument. It was specifically and what it was capable of you know, resonating with as a frequency and vibration. And then I was just right there, and in that moment, and the hall was just silent, and I went, whoa.
And it'll resonate beautifully too. In a big space like that.
Yeah. We were out in some fancy hall near Karapiro.
Okay. That's all right. It's been and gone. People can't go to it until maybe next year.
Yeah, and I personally and professionally would say it's better to open your hearts. Opening your wallets, that's easy. That's easy, you know, really. Whether it's $5, $5,000, $50,000, when you open your heart, there's another resonance of sustainability that happens around, it's, you know, it's rongoa, it's medicine.
And that's the volunteers, that's where they're coming from.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, that's how our own community operates, on a huge body of people who are kaimahi, who are kaitiaki, who give their time, expertise to gifting that their extraordinary belief that we can have a better do better.
All right, folks, we've been talking to Ngaronoa Renata in our Kairongoa segment, talking about earlier about Matariki, and this time just now about Maunga Tautari, the Sanctuary Mountain. Sounds like it's doing well. And
I would recommend people go try to take their families there at some point and actually experience the Maunga.
Because you did that too a few weeks ago, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be quite wet now. There's a beautiful fire who works there 2 days a week. She's a specialist in rongoā Māori at the centre, and you must meet her.
You
must meet her, and you must talk with her, because the medicine, the rongoā that she makes from the mountain.
All right, do you want to sign us off?
So that's it for me. Please, once I get the poster out later today, it's all on.
This is the 29th.
Event on the 29th for Puanga Matariki, alongside many other beautiful offerings that will be happening within our village.
Yeah.
Ai. Ngā mihi ki a koutou, ki a haumaru, ai, mā te wā.